A severe traffic accident on U.S. Highway 14 resulted in life-threatening injuries and a major road closure on Monday afternoon. According to reports from the Richland County Sheriff's Office, the incident began shortly before 3:40 p.m. when dispatch received calls regarding a Ford Escape driving illegally on the gravel bike trail between Gotham and Twin Bluffs. The driver of that vehicle, 38-year-old Andres Ixta of Gotham, allegedly exited the trail and failed to stop at the stop sign at the intersection of Highway 14 and Twin Bluffs Drive. This maneuver led to a violent collision with a milk truck operated by Wesley Nelson, 59, of Dodgeville. The impact was significant enough to eject Ixta from his vehicle, causing him to sustain severe injuries. Emergency responders requested UW MedFlight to land at the Richland Hospital, from where Ixta was airlifted to UW Hospital for specialized medical care. The driver of the milk truck, Mr. Nelson, remained on the scene and cooperated fully with the sheriff's office during the initial stages of the investigation. The Wisconsin State Patrol was called to the scene to assist local authorities with a commercial vehicle inspection and a formal crash reconstruction to determine the exact mechanics of the collision. Due to the severity of the crash and the extensive investigation required, Highway 14 remained closed to all traffic for over 5 hours. The scene was eventually cleared and the highway reopened at 9:09 p.m. The Richland Fire Department, Richland EMS, and Wegner Auto Service assisted at the scene. The Richland County Board of Supervisors has announced a last-minute change to the meeting location for its upcoming session this evening. The meeting, scheduled to begin at 6 p.m., will now take place at the Phoenix Center in Richland Center. This decision was made to accommodate the significant community interest surrounding the proposed 765 kV transmission line resolution, as the original boardroom might not have provided sufficient space for the expected attendance. County officials are working to ensure the public remains involved despite the venue change. While every effort is being made to provide a virtual online option for residents who cannot attend in person, the administration cautions that such an option may not be available due to the logistical challenges of the short notice relocation. Residents are encouraged to attend in person at the Phoenix Center to stay informed on the transmission line developments and other county business. Help set local students up for success. The Ithaca Lions Club is stuffing the bus this Wednesday, August 19th, from 12 noon until 6:30 p.m. in the Ithaca High School parking lot. Just look for the big bus. They're collecting school supplies, cleaning supplies, and monetary donations to support students and teachers. Generosity makes a huge difference. Stop by this Wednesday and help the Ithaca Lions stuff the bus. Wisconsin Emergency Management and the Department of Administration's Division of Enterprise Technology have opened the grant application period as of August 17th for the state and local cybersecurity grant program. This federal grant assists government agencies that face cybersecurity risks due to outdated or inadequate IT infrastructure. The funds may be used for various cybersecurity activities, such as purchasing and activating multi-factor authentication, managed detection and response, endpoint detection and response, and extended detection and response. Eligible entities for this program include a broad range of government organizations, such as counties, municipalities, local public authorities, school districts, special districts, intrastate districts, councils of government, regional or interstate government entities. This funding opportunity represents the third of four planned cycles and holds the distinction of being the final cycle with no cost share requirement. Subsequent funding cycles will require a 40% cost share. Applications for this cycle must be submitted by October 30th. Interested agencies must be able to justify their need for improvements using evidence such as vulnerability scan results, records of past cybersecurity incidents, or relevant audit findings and legal mandates. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction has been awarded a significant five-year, $10.5 million federal grant intended to address the urgent special education teacher shortage within the state. This funding, provided through the U.S. Department of Education's State Personnel Development Grant Program, will finance the Special Education Teacher Apprenticeship and Induction Retention System in Wisconsin, known as STAIRS Wisconsin. This statewide initiative is designed to recruit, prepare, and retain specialized educators at a time when the profession faces unprecedented stability challenges. Addressing the workforce crisis is a primary objective of the grant, as current data reveals a critical retention gap where only 43% of special education teachers remain in Wisconsin public schools by their eighth year of service. To counter this trend, STAIRS Wisconsin emphasizes an earn while you learn apprenticeship approach. By partnering with the Department of Workforce Development and the Wisconsin Improvement Program for Special Education Leadership, the DPI aims to expand these apprenticeship opportunities and provide robust induction programs that offer coaching, mentoring, and professional learning for emerging leaders and new educators. State Superintendent Dr. Jill Underley emphasized the necessity of this investment, noting that the loss of educators directly impacts student success. Wisconsin continues to face a critical teacher shortage, and nowhere is that challenge more urgent than in special education, Dr. Underley stated. When we lose educators, it's our students who feel the greatest impact. Strengthening our schools begins with strengthening the teaching profession, and this grant is a major investment in that effort. Through these comprehensive support systems, the state intends to ensure that every student has access to well-prepared educators who are equipped to succeed throughout their careers. U.S. Senators Ron Johnson and Rand Paul have released a newly obtained email from May of 2021 that highlights internal concerns within federal health agencies regarding COVID-19 vaccine adverse events. The correspondence, sourced from Dr. Anthony Fauci's government records, features then-acting FDA Commissioner Dr. Janet Woodcock reaching out to top health officials about reports of symptoms that traditional surveillance systems were ill-equipped to detect. In her message to Drs. Fauci and Francis Collins, Woodcock noted that the reported symptoms did not form a distinctive syndrome and were difficult to quantify through standard laboratory testing. She expressed a need for a dedicated study, warning that ignoring these festering problems could lead to future unpreparedness. Despite Dr. Fauci's internal suggestion to involve CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, current records remain unclear as to whether such a consultation ever took place. Governor Tony Evers issued a sharp rebuke to President Donald J. Trump and Republicans in Congress following a new report detailing a significant decline in health care coverage. The report highlights that enrollment in the Affordable Care Act fell by 16% in Wisconsin during 2026, a stark reversal after consecutive years of record-breaking participation. This downturn was mirrored across the country, with New Mexico being the only state to avoid a drop in enrollment. Nationally, the 12% decline represents nearly 3 million fewer Americans with coverage, including 45,000 residents in Wisconsin. The governor attributed this decline to the expiration of federal tax credits last December, which had previously lowered the cost of premiums for millions. According to Governor Evers, the decision by the administration and its congressional allies to let these credits expire was a calculated move to prioritize tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. As a result, health care costs have surged, pricing many families out of their plans. Current projections indicate the crisis will only deepen, with the number of uninsured Americans expected to rise to nearly 4 million by 2027. When it comes to bank and credit card accounts, some consumers have a fear that scammers might try to gain access to their accounts. Financial institutions are great at contacting account holders when they notice suspicious activity, but consumers should be aware that there are also bank imposters who report false information about an account. They even have a new method to communicate with account holders to obtain personal information. Michelle Reinen is with Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
We've talked before that scammers are contacting consumers with claims that there's been suspicious activity on a bank account or a credit card. And sometimes these are cold calls. Other times they're text messages asking consumers to call with a provided phone number. But in both cases, the consumer is connected with a scammer who says that they need to verify the consumer's identity. But now with this new twist, the scammer is switching the conversation from a traditional phone call to a video call. So examples being FaceTime for an Apple or an iPhone and Google Meets for the Android phone. But once that video call begins, the scammer, who's pretending to be that representative for the financial institution, asks the consumer to point the camera at their computer screen while they log into their online account, or if they don't have a computer, to just do a share screen on their cell phone. And both of these let the scammer see the consumer's private login details and possibly other information in real time, such as answers to a security question or a bank account number. And the consumers often don't even realize that they're exposing their information during this video call.
If you receive a call about suspicious activity on your account and you're not sure if it is your financial institution, the best thing to do is hang up and contact your bank directly.
If your financial institution thinks that there's suspicious activity or a problem, they're going to ask you to come down to the office if it's local. And otherwise, they'll say, call us back at the number on the back of the card or that you have for us so you can confirm your identity with confidence, not with a phone number that they've given you or on the spot in this real time. And they certainly will never ask to see a computer screen so they can get that private details. And just remember that urgency and pressure, those are those red flags that something is a scam.
If you suspect you've been a victim of a bank imposter scam, contact DACCAP's Consumer Protection Hotline by phone at 800-422-7128. Monday, September 14th at 1 p.m., the Richland County ADRC will have a free presentation on Medicare at the Richland Health and Human Services Building. This presentation will talk about how and when you should sign up. They break Medicare down into all its parts and will let you know what you need to know to make sure your health needs are covered. This presentation requires you to sign up in advance, as materials will be prepared for all participants. Please call the ADRC at 608-647-4616, no later than September 7th, to save your spot. U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Richard Blumenthal, joined by 28 Democratic colleagues, have formally demanded that Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. reverse the cancellation of critical health research grants. These grants, administered by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, were abruptly terminated July 15th, impacting approximately 150 researchers across 30 states. The lawmakers characterized the agency's actions as an outrageous abuse of power that disrupts decades of taxpayer-funded progress aimed at improving patient safety and healthcare delivery. In their letter, the lawmakers called for the immediate restoration of full funding to all affected projects and a detailed explanation of the decision-making process behind the terminations. They noted that the agency has only awarded 5% of its available extramural grant funds for the fiscal year, leading to staff layoffs and the discontinuation of programs nationwide. The senators set a deadline of August 25th for a response, insisting that it is the department's responsibility to ensure that resources are used as intended by law to protect public health and improve patient outcomes. In a powerful demonstration of community and industry collaboration, agricultural businesses, emergency responders, and educators recently converged at Bittick Incorporated in Livingston for a comprehensive safety training event. The initiative brought together employees from Bittick and Hartung Brothers alongside Southwest Wisconsin Technical College instructors and firefighters from the Livingston, Clifton, and Montfort departments. This hands-on program was meticulously designed to prevent workplace accidents and ensure that all participants are prepared to respond effectively during critical emergencies. The curriculum focused on high-risk agricultural scenarios, including grain bin safety, confined space entry, lockout and tagout procedures, and the proper use of safety harnesses and fire extinguishers. The event was the culmination of a two-year dialogue between Teresa Sander, HR and Safety Administrator at BIDIC, and Steve Williamson, Purchasing Agent and Safety Advisor at Hartung Brothers. Beyond fulfilling mandatory safety requirements, Sander noted that the joint training served as a vital platform for partners to share ideas, learn from diverse perspectives, and expand the professional bonds that define the region's workforce. A central highlight of the day was a grain rescue demonstration led by Carl Sandry, Southwest Tech's Fire Service Training Coordinator. During the exercise, volunteers experienced being partially engulfed in grain while firefighters practiced rescue techniques using specialized tubes and corn removal equipment. While Sandry acknowledged that grain entrapments are fortunately rare, he emphasized that local preparedness is essential for saving lives before additional resources can arrive. This collaborative spirit not only strengthens regional safety awareness, but also serves as a model for future partnerships between business, education, and public safety organizations throughout Southwest Wisconsin. In its latest major philanthropic effort, Alliant Energy and the Alliant Energy Foundation have announced the distribution of more than $708,000 in community grants. This second cycle of the year benefits a diverse array of causes and nonprofit organizations throughout Iowa and Wisconsin, targeting four key pillars of community well-being: safety and engagement, hunger and housing, environmental stewardship, and workforce readiness. A significant portion of the funding, exceeding $130,000, was directed toward community safety and engagement. These grants reached 40 different communities, providing essential support for first responder organizations, including police, fire, and EMS departments. The funds are earmarked for vital equipment purchases and upgrades, as well as local events like fairs and festivals that foster stronger community connections. Addressing basic needs remains a priority, with over $210,000 awarded to initiatives focused on hunger and housing across 30 communities. This support bolsters food pantries, meal delivery programs, and outreach efforts. Furthermore, the grants assist organizations providing transition and permanent housing support, which are critical for maintaining long-term stability for local residents. Environmental stewardship projects received nearly $90,000 to protect natural habitats and expand green spaces. Spanning 15 communities, these funds support tree and prairie plantings, wildlife conservation, and the enhancement of local parks and trails. The foundation also prioritized environmental education and school-based programs to inspire future conservation efforts. The largest share of the current cycle, totaling more than $255,000, was dedicated to workforce readiness. These grants and scholarships support educational and skill development programs in 32 communities. Targeted initiatives include STEM programming, youth agriculture, and library resources like bookmobiles, all designed to prepare the next generation for professional success. A chaotic scene in the closing hours of the Wisconsin State Fair on Sunday. Milwaukee TV stations obtained video of a large fight. On Monday, Wisconsin State Fair officials reported police arrested seven people connected to the incidents. There were no serious injuries reported to fairgoers, but a member of the fair security team was injured. A statement said the incidents Sunday evening were isolated to the final hours of the fair and are not representative of the experience our guests enjoyed throughout the event. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has announced that bonus antlerless harvest authorizations for the 2026 gun deer season will become available starting 10 a.m. yesterday. Purchases can be made through the Go Wild online portal or at official licensed sales locations. To manage the expected high volume of traffic, an online queuing system has been implemented. Customers entering the Go Wild site between 9:45 and 10 a.m. have been randomly assigned spots in a virtual queue. Those arriving later are added in their order of arrival. Hunters are reminded they must have a valid deer hunting license approval and must identify specific deer management zone and unit, as well as whether they will be hunting on public or private land before completing a purchase. The sales schedule is organized by zone to streamline the process. Forest zones north and central lead the sales, followed by central farmland zone and then southern farmland zone August 19th. By August 20th, authorizations for all remaining zones will be available for purchase. Authorizations are sold at a rate of one per person per day. The cost is set at $12 for Wisconsin residents, $20 for non-residents, and $5 for youth hunters ages 11 and under. Additionally, beginning this year, all users with existing Go Wild accounts are required to use their established username and password for login. New users will be prompted to create these credentials to access their accounts. Hunters are encouraged to verify their account information and review the current deer management unit maps prior to the start of the sales period to ensure a smooth transaction.